Wholesaling Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. It's time for Talking with TD.
Touchdown, Tennessee!
The latest on the Two-Tone Blue with ESPN's Teron Davenport.
Put up a shut-up term.
This is Nashville's best sports talk.
ESPN.
102.5 The Game.
That's right. Hey, Elijah, I got the timer set. 14.59 seconds. That is a record. Yo, we're going to come out the box ready to go.
Woo.
You are now talking with TD. Got Elijah hitting the switches. I am yours truly, Teron Davenport. It is the season finale, regular and postseason finale of Talking with TD. But hey, just because the game stopped don't mean we stopped.
It'll ever stop.
Never stop recording. We're going to keep this thing rolling. We got Matt Miller from thedraftscout.com, formerly of Bleacher Report. He's going to come on. I want to get into a lot of things with him. I want to actually get into his mind and how he goes about evaluating players. So we'll make sure we do that. Man, as always, Run TMC with Chris Sanders, former Titans receiver. Definitely there's a lot we got to unpack there, the rushing attack and just how that works. So make sure you stay tuned for that. And I think what we need to do first, though, Elijah, is just unpack this game and just look at some of the things that went wrong. It was so crazy because those first couple series, I'm like, yo, these guys are going to end up. They could have hosted a game now that I think about it.
Because of Pittsburgh losing.
Oh, no, they wouldn't have because it would have been Buffalo and Kansas City.
Right.
Never mind. It would have been a trip to Buffalo. That would have been interesting. But I really was thinking, like, hey, man, divisional round, I think this is it's 10 to nothing. And if you look at some of the numbers, it was 10 to nothing in the second quarter. Over the last five seasons, any team that was – the combined record of teams that were down by 10 points in the second quarter, 1-13. A.J. Brown couldn't be stopped. I mean, he was, hey, give me your lunch money. That's how he was with Marlon Humphrey.
Humphrey couldn't touch him.
I'm talking about the slot fade. I actually did a little collection of the dots that we are able to do with Next Gen Stats. And I did, because they tried it earlier in the game, like in the first series. Tannehill got pressure. He had to overthrow it. But then they went back to it a little bit later, and there were two. First, it was like a 28-yard game, and then there was one on that same side where he gave him a move to the outside, came back in, and then ran a nice crossing route. That was like a 14-yard game. Or pardon me, that was on the right side. And then there was another one that he hit him with. And then you had the slot fade for a touchdown on the left side. So it just really was showing that, hey, you know what? Marlon Humphrey, I get it. You're the guy that this team thinks is their best corner. Our best receiver is better than you. And I think that was the mindset that Ryan Tannehill and Arthur Smith had. They attacked it. Now, I will say this. The Ravens did make some adjustments. But still, when they went to that package, there were times where Humphrey was matched up against A.J. Brown. And I think you absolutely have to take advantage of that. Now, when I say they made adjustments, Jimmy Smith started to end up drawing A.J.'s number. And it makes sense because Jimmy Smith is a bigger corner. He's long. I mean, like he's what, 6'1 or so? But he's all legs. Like he's a long corner. Kind of like Ty Smith, right? You know, a guy who looks taller than he really is. But Jimmy Smith plays bigger and taller than he really is. So I get why they put him, especially out when he lined up outside. I just don't think they didn't adjust to that adjustment. That didn't happen. And then also, I wonder where in that game something went wrong for Corey Davis. Because obviously at the end of the game, he was on the sideline, helmet off. Look, man, he was hurt. You know, because I see people, and I get it. I get it because, you know, there are times, me myself, like, I wonder, like, man, is he really a dog? You know, mm-hmm. I think he proved it this year, though. He proved it that he is a dog. But it just, in this situation, you know, he wasn't available to them, and that ended up being a big thing at the end. I just think, you know, offensively, there's a lot more that they could have done. I think they should have looked at trying to spread the field. And it's always, look, I'm sitting here in a chair, mic in front of me. Like, it's easy for me to say, hey, you should have done this, this, and this. I would like to have seen them spread the field a bit more, open things up a little bit, because there was so much happening inside as far as trying to stop Derrick Henry. And in addition to spreading the field, you know, I'm not only talking about with personnel. I'm talking about toss sweeps. I'm talking about, and even, look, if they want to stack and they want to attack the middle like that, you know what? Let's see a jet motion. You know, whether it be Khalif Raymond or A.J., give A.J. Brown the ball. Jet motion, mm-hmm. let him run. Do what he does. I think those are some of the things that may have helped open this up a little bit more offensively. As far as what happened, I knew it was going to be a physical, tough game. You know, just coming into, you know it, because both of these teams are known for their toughness, right? You play against the Ravens, you play against the Titans. Afterwards, you're going to feel like, you know, you won a couple rounds with Mike Tyson or somebody. Maybe the 50-year-old Mike Tyson, you know what I'm saying? Because you're not going multiple rounds with the younger, focused one, but you get where I'm going with that. And I just think, you know, standing there when they were coming off the field pregame, and the same thing happened against the Jaguars in the first game that Thursday night last year. I saw Calais Campbell talking, and I was like, yeah, he might do something.
He's locked in.
Coming off the field, he started with Corey Davis and talked to everybody all the way to Roger Saffold. And I'm not saying, like, you see somebody talking, you're like, oh, yeah, he's going to play well. I'm just saying that made me like, this is going to be a good one. Because you don't normally see players back and forth like that, right? And then there was all the other background. Hey, Mike Vrabel, would you beat up John Harbaugh for the win? You know, that was a cool question that by Diana. It was funny, you know what I mean, and Vrabel handled it well. But you just knew that was going to be a battle. And that's really what 20-13, man. Like, it was definitely a battle. But it just goes to show you Lamar Jackson and how disciplined you have to be with him. Because there were some times where – you know, they kind of closed in, and he was at that run. He hit 20.6 miles an hour, by the way, on that one. That run that he had, the 48-yard or the 42-yard touchdown, he stepped up in the pocket, and, like, nothing was there. Nobody was there to stop him. Found that seam, and when he's able to, because he can run sideways just as fast as he runs forward, he was able to cut it back, and he hit that open field, was gone. And even Adoree Jackson couldn't catch him. And Adoree, you know, is pretty fast. That was an issue, right? He just and this is the thing that I continue to harp upon when I mention what Lamar Jackson brings to the table. He makes you change the way you play football. He makes you change. Sometimes you have to spy him. Other times, you know, you have to work. And they were doing it, right? They were blitzing off the edge to try to flush him to one side. And there was an opportunity where they used that to their advantage. They used the sideline. The sideline was the 12th man. He had to step out of bounds because he didn't have any room to space to run. Why? Because they decided to run a quarterback sweep to the short side of the field. Early in the game, Kenny Vaccaro and Desmond King did an excellent job playing pitch man and playing the pitcher, the quarterback. It just started to break down towards the end. And Adoree Jackson, you know, Lamar and Hollywood Brown were able to connect a few times. I think he was like 5 out of 6 targets. That's not good. That's not good. So there's a lot of soul searching that this team has to do. The 4th and 2, just to get into that for a second, a lot of people focused on that. I challenge anyone who looked at that, go back 2 more plays. Well, actually 3. Derrick Henry, first and 10, 8 yards.
His largest run of the game.
Largest run of the game. And it was fourth quarter. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Fourth, you know what happens in the fourth quarter? You know what happens?
It's his money time.
He turns into John Franco and closes it out. Now, that was an opportunity to have him close it out. Second and two. Think about the second and two. You throw a fade to A.J. Brown. I get it. You know, your guy against their guy, you believe in your guy. Why didn't he believe in A.J. later?
That's a good question.
You know? But second and two, you throw the fade. Third and two. And it was actually a pretty – I like the play call. Jonnu Smith in the backfield, mm-hmm. He wheels out. Now, this is something that – and I used to see Vernon Davis do this a lot. And I remember when I was covering the 49ers, I talked to him about it. Jumping to catch the football. One of my favorite receivers, Terry Glenn, jumping to catch the football. That's when you know a guy is not fully confident in his hands. Jumping to catch the football and catching it with his body, right? That's what he did. If he just catches it with his hands, I'm sitting here in a chair saying this. I'm just trying to relay something that I saw. I'm not being critical of Jonnu Smith because I think he's a very good player. I just think it would have been better for him if he stayed on the ground, caught it, and turned upfield that way. Because when he jumped, he lost momentum. And when you're in the air, you're not connected to the ground, so you can't drive and support yourself when you're being hit. And DBs see that, and they love it. Especially headhunters, not headhunters, but wig splitters like Deshaun Elliott. They love that. So he saw it, he hit him, jarred it loose. It's third and two, you punt. Or fourth and two, you punt. The decision, I understand, right? You wanted to, because the defense was playing well.
They were, and we're getting pressure on Lamar.
Exactly.
For the first time they've done almost on any quarterback all year outside of the Texans game.
They held him to 17 points up until that moment. So I get it. You want to pin him back, get a fresh set of downs so you could call the plays accordingly. Right?
Especially if you got a good punt. If you would have punted him inside the 5-yard line too, you handcuffed the Ravens on what they could have done offensively.
And that's
the punt wasn't ideal.
It wasn't Brett Kern-like.
It wasn't Brett Kern-like.
Let's
exactly.
Put it that way.
Because when you have Brett Kern right back there and you know that he can pin it inside the 5, that makes a little more sense.
Yeah. So I'm not going to blast Coach Vrabel for that. It's an interesting contrast, though. Mm-hmm. I will say this. You would like to see more consistency. 4th and 11, they went for it. But the thing you have to remember, they went for it. I'm talking about against Houston.
Yeah.
Right. You have to remember, like, each game, and this is something that the analytics guys and you know, some of that crowd, not to be critical of them, but, hey, look, I'm going to be. If you don't understand ebbs and flows of the game or feel for the game, how momentum is, and I know those guys hate momentum because you can't put a formula or algorithm on it. It's just something that it's there. Believe it. It's there. So if you can't feel, like, you won't exactly understand how each situation is different. In this situation, he had reason to trust the defense to get the 3-and-out for them and get them the ball back. But nevertheless, it was a tough play. We went into it a little bit deeper, but yeah, look, man, it's the season finale. Like, you gotta dig deep. You know what I'm saying? So that's what we do. Before we move on to the next segment, because I do want to get Chris Anders in here, I definitely, if you have not subscribed to Talking with TD, I need you to do me a favor. Search Spotify, Google Podcasts, iTunes. You'll find it Talking, WITHTD, Talking with TD. If you have found it and subscribed to it, I appreciate that. Next thing, rate, review. Thank you. We'll be right back.
This is Derrick Henry. You're now talking with TD.
Uh-huh. For you. Let it play. Just a little bit. I want to hear the guitar.
There it is. They don't know about that.
Yeah. Run TMC.
What's up, Doc?
You know, you have to have enthusiasm and still have happiness because, although the season is over as far as what's going on the field, there are things happening off the field. And I know after Marcus Peters had that interception, there was I could have swore, like, I went back and watched the TV copy, and they had some of the stuff on the sideline. And you know what I heard, right?
What'd you hear?
Throw the damn towel. Throw the towel.
Throw the towel, Rock. Throw the towel. You know what I'm saying, man? Hey, but on the flip side, hey, that was a good game, wasn't it, man?
Oh, yeah, no doubt. It was an awesome game.
And, you know, it was just, if you look at the Baltimore Ravens, they only made like 3 or 4 plays now. It wasn't like they just blew the Titans out.
Right.
People got to understand that. You know, we got to remember that when the Titans played them the first time, they didn't have some of their dogs in. They didn't have Calais Campbell. They didn't have Williams. And I think Wolf was kind of banged up a little bit. So when they got them big run stoppers in, it was that defense just felt different, man.
Yeah, and that's something we actually talked about on the preview. I don't remember if it was you or Jay. It was probably you asked me about, you know, some of the guys up front. And one of the things I said was how Derek Wolf in the fourth quarter of that Week 11 game, he wore down. But this time, he had his right and his left-hand man with him in Brandon Williams and Calais Campbell. And I want to get into just the way that they were able to reset the line of scrimmage up front and how they were winning on the outside. And even the linebackers were coming up, cut back lanes. I mean, that was probably the most complete effort I've seen a defense have against Derrick Henry and that rushing attack.
They just had a game plan. You can see it. They were going to be sold out to stopping the run, but also they confused Tannehill on some of the coverages. And I'm going to tell you, remember that, you know, the interception by Peters?
Mm-hmm.
McPeters? Okay, it was a 12 personnel, one back, two tight ends, and then they went 2 by 2. They had Raymond on the right. They had Janu on the right with him in the slot. And then on the weak side, they had Firkser and they had Brown. So now on the strong side, they went zone, but then on the weak side, they went man. So he's thinking something different, and that's why he was confused and threw the interception.
Yeah.
So the whole game plan was amazing. I mean, just on what they did, they stopped the run, but also they confused Tannehill in the coverage, man.
Let me ask you about that play.
Sure.
I felt strongly that Raymond should have found a way to play through contact there. But, you know, I don't want to critique where it may not be necessary. That's the way I felt. I didn't play in the league. I played the position, but that's how I look at it. So you haven't been there and done that, you know, at the highest level. Is that accurate?
Yeah, but here's the thing. That's the point that I was making. They were playing zone on that side. They were going man-to-man with Firkser and Brown on the weak side.
Right,
Brown was open. And every listen, I'm not acting like I'm a quarterback because he's got to make his reads. But as I'm looking at the film, I don't think he knew what the coverage was. And I may be wrong, but I'm not throwing it to Raymond. If I see 11 out there and it's man to man, I don't care what I'm looking at. I'm taking 3 steps and I'm throwing it. Now to your point with Raymond, the one thing that Raymond did is he didn't even run his route. He ran and he's looking back. So I don't know if he's trying to look at a hot route or looking quick because the blitz is coming, but it's like he ran straight and then he took about 4 or 5 steps and he looked back and all Peters did, all he did was stand there.
Yeah, he just squatted right there and he ran into him. You know, and that's actually what Vrabel said the refs told him, and you know he in so many words didn't agree with that, but I mean that's essentially what happened. It was frustrating seeing that offense have that as their last play of the game.
I know.
It was frustrating seeing that.
Into the Ravens, because if you look at it in 1999, what beat us? An interception.
Mm-hmm.
What beat the Titans this year? Interception. But, you know, I don't know what Raymond was doing, and I'm a receiver, but I don't know if he was looking because I don't know if they blitzed. Or I don't know, but I know they're playing zone to that side. I don't know what he was looking at, but I don't know if he's running a curl or was he running a seam. You don't know what he was running because once he released off the line of scrimmage, about 3 or 4 yards down the field, he's looking back. So is there a miscommunication with him or Tannehill? Or I don't know. I mean, that's a question that we're not going to know, that it can't be answered.
I tell you another thing that's really interesting, because I asked Ryan about this, you know, and he said that he saw Khalif have an inside release.
Mm-hmm.
And he felt like he won right away. And the thing mm-hmm. is, when you go back and watch, mm-hmm. initially they're showing man, like I have the play pulled up right now. They're mm-hmm. showing man across the board, yep. but mm-hmm. as he's going through his cadence,
hey,
yep. Peters drops out. He bails out, and I'm talking about like really bails out.
To a third, right.
To cover three. Yep. And well, to third on his side. And then up top.
To his side, yeah. But on us, so we call it cover 30. Man on the weak side, and they're playing three on the back side.
Got you.
On the strong side, yes.
Got you. So, and up top, you got the man.
Right.
I really think this was a pre-snap read that he made. Just a pre-snap determination.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, and that's why I keep, you know, because I went back and looked at it, too. I'm like, well, what made him throw the interception? I think, just like what you said, the coverage fooled him of him thinking something's there, and it's totally different because we call it cover 30. I call it cover 30 to where it's cover three to one side and it's man-to-man on the other side. So it's like cover zero on the other side. So I think that Tannehill was confused. So in his mind, he's like, okay, I'm looking at a certain coverage, so I'm going to throw to a spot. But did you know that Peters just sat there, just like what we talked about, and sat on a spot?
Yep.
And it's just weird. I mean, I'm not going to sit up here and act like I'm Mr. Quarterback Guru or Mr. Quarterback Coach, but I just think that Tannehill was a little confused on the coverage.
Yeah, 100%. And it's crazy because, you know, you got the safety rotating over top of that. And in this freeze shot, it's literally showing it, you go from the 45, the Titans 45, all the way down. There's nobody there. Nobody there. Humphrey is going with Firkser on the out.
I know.
AJ Brown has the Randy Moss hand up.
Yeah.
You know, and it's the safety is just complete. He's not in the middle of the field. He's taking on, for some reason, this safety is going to Raymond Silas. He's already committed to that. Ah, that's frustrating.
Yeah, and I think that they, you know, when I say that, you know, when they went into 12 personnel, one back, two tight ends, and two wide receivers, but they split out to two by two. And, you know, the person that was in the slot was Janu. So if you look at the safety, go back and look at it.
Yeah.
The safety kind of cheats over to Janu's side.
He goes right.
So they're playing three over there, but they're playing man on Firkser and Brown. I mean, listen, I'm not going to act like that's not a tough read because it looks like something different. But if he would just say, you know what, man, I got man-to-man over here with Brown. I'm just going to take three steps and let it go. If he would have did that, I think we wouldn't be sitting up here saying the Tennessee Titans lost.
Yeah, because it's there. And I think Brown hauls that in. I will
yeah,
say
he was
to,
mad, too.
Oh, yeah, he was. He was, definitely. And I will say to the Ravens' credit, you know, after seeing AJ eat Marlon Humphrey up alive, they did put Jimmy Smith on him a bit more.
They did. They sure did. They sure did.
So that was an adjustment. But, yeah, oh, man, it's just – yeah, I mean, I know we started out talking about the run, but I think it's important to get into that. Let's get back to the run, though.
Sure.
You know, and what was – like, they had the game plan, but, I mean, this Titans team had a game plan too, but they were consistent. The line of scrimmage was consistently minus 1 or 2 yards.
Yeah, but see, here's the thing is, number one, the Baltimore Ravens were physical.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they were physical. And then another thing that they do is they were in the gaps. They had gap integrity.
Yes.
Gap integrity, yep. you're in your gap. So if you look at some of the runs, that right when Henry was getting the ball, he never could get started. So they knew that if he doesn't have a full head of steam, then he's not going to be able to make those big runs. Even if you hit him and you miss him, he doesn't have that head of steam to get to the second level, the third level, and run the ball and make a big run. So they knew what they were doing. They did the exact same thing that the Green Bay Packers did. You know this is a copycat league.
Mm-hmm.
It's a copycat league. So what they did is they had gap integrity. So Henry's a one-cut guy. He's a one-cut guy, and then he explodes through the hole. But see, you can't cut through the hole if somebody's standing there
right
and waiting for you. Them big old dudes were waiting for him. So I don't want people to get upset about Henry just having this one game, saying that he's soft and he was running soft. you got to understand, Baltimore's defense was bringing it, hands down.
Mm-hmm. No doubt about it. You mentioned the Packers game where they did similar thing. Kenny Clark up front. You know, and the thing that people have to look at, there aren't, the NFL isn't littered with Kenny Clarks, right? And Za'Darius Smiths and Brandon Williamses and Calais Campbells. So that being said, you mentioned it's a copycat league. What do the Titans need to do to adjust to this outside of the fact that they're not going to face these type of guys up front all the time?
You know, I mean, I can say that they can get some more linemen and be better in that aspect, but they just had Henry just had a 2,000-yard season.
Right.
You know?
Right. Don't forget
you know what
it.
I'm saying?
Fifth
Don't,
best in the history of the game.
We had three left tackles. We had Quisenberry, we had Lawan, and we had Sombrero. I can't pronounce. I think I pronounced his name wrong. But there's three. And then you're mixing every other week or every two or three weeks, you're mixing up the offense. But Henry had 2,000 yards. So what do we need to change? I don't know. If you got 2,000 yards, I just think you just need to keep master what you're doing and maybe, you know, get Isaiah Wilson's mind right and get him back in the mix and maybe add that. But I don't think you changed too much, TD. I really don't.
Now,
go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead. Finish with you.
No, I just don't understand. I'm looking at Facebook and I'm looking at Instagram and I'm looking at all these things where people say, well, Henry got 40 yards and he was running soft. What?
You can't run. If you're getting tackled before you even get any momentum, you're not going to run through somebody. It's just not going
to
happen.
So you asked the question, what do they need to change? Not too much. I'm serious. I mean, I know that's not a lot of people don't want to hear, but you really don't need to change too much. You just got a running back that had 2,000 yards.
That's what I wanted you to say. You know what I mean? But I didn't want to put it in a way that would make it obvious that. But, yeah, that's exactly the case. I don't think there's really much that needs to be changed, right?
What you talking about, Willis?
But there's something that could change. And
wide
that's,
receiver.
We're going to say that for the next week. All right, we're going to save it for next week. But offensive coordinator-wise, Arthur Smith, how he sets up the rushing attack, how he attacks defenses. Is that something that you think he could take someplace else and execute as soundly as what's going on here?
I mean, he could. I mean, but it all depends on what kind of personnel we have.
Right.
I mean, if you look at the Tennessee Titans, they have great personnel. They have a dominant running back. You have some good wide receivers. You had a tight end that's athletic. You got a quarterback that can make plays. They have the ability to where he can do formations. He can do shifts. He can do motions because he has the personnel.
Mm-hmm.
I would say if he goes to Jacksonville. I mean, I'm not saying he's going. Say if he goes to Jacksonville, it may not be as prosperous because he doesn't have the personnel.
Yeah.
So it all depends on where he goes. If he can get the right personnel and really use his mind in doing what he did with the Tennessee Titans. So it all depends on what personnel he goes to or the personnel that he has.
Yeah, and I think with that, it's going to depend on what's available as far as the resources. What do you have in cap space? I tell you one thing that would be really – that I would consider if I was Arthur Smith.
What's that?
Go to a imagine you drop Aaron Jones on the Chargers. See what I'm saying? I could be mistaken, but I'm almost certain they have room to sign a guy like Aaron Jones. Or
with
let's say
the Titans?
No. I'm saying the Chargers. If he were to go to the Chargers. Did I say drop Aaron Jones on the Titans?
Yeah, no.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure. Yeah.
Nah, we'll go to the Chargers. But do they have they have some okay wide receivers. They have Gutten. From, he went to Notre Dame, and I forgot what junior college he went to, but does he actually have the personnel to do that at the Chargers? I mean, understand that he's a great play caller, and he puts guys in position to succeed. But
I like the guys that they have there.
Do you? Well,
yeah, I mean, I like Keenan Allen.
Oh, yeah, Keenan Allen's not bad.
I think Mike Williams, and it's very interesting because a few picks later he went – than Corey Davis, but they're two picks later. They're basically, I mean, he has a 1,000-yard season to his credit, right. So I'll give him that. But they're very similar as far as like that, not consistent, but when on, they are on type of players. Yeah. You know what I mean? And I can see them. I mean, this draft would be deep. You got the tight end from Miami who is basically Jonnu Smith part two. So you could add some things. Chargers would be a really good option for him. I don't know where he's going to go, if he's going to stay, what. But
I would stay.
Yeah,
I would stay.
I agree, too. Because
I mean, why not get your – oh, go ahead. Go ahead. Sorry.
No, you're right, because I would further establish myself. And it's not even further establish myself. You need the right opportunity. And in my opinion, there's two opportunities for him. That's Atlanta and Chargers. Those would be the only two where I could say, all right, I get it. But I wouldn't go. God bless whoever goes to the Eagles. I'll say it that way. I hope Coach Deuce gets the job. I know he wants it. I know for sure that he wants it. And he would be good for that because he's already established there. But someone outside coming in there, listen, no bueno. Yeah.
And you know the reason why I think he might leave this year is because you got to remember, when you're hot, you got to strike where it's hot, while it's hot.
Yeah.
Because he comes back this year, and I'm not saying it's going to happen. He comes back and stays with the Titans. They go 5-11. Then he's not hot.
He's an afterthought. Greg Roman, perfect example. Exactly. And they went 11-5.
That's what I'm saying. You know, so I wouldn't be mad if he left, because if he's got to do what's best for his family. I'll be selfish because I want him to stay here. But at the end of the day, while you're hot, man, and your name's out there, and they're talking about you being a head coach, then you need to strike while the iron's hot. So I don't blame him, boss.
Just have to go to the right opportunity. I think that's critical.
Yeah.
Because,
no doubt.
You know, if you go to Jacksonville and that thing blows up in your face.
That's what I'm saying.
Guess what? You're going to be a head coach at Miami of Ohio. So you know what I mean? So you got to.
Or McNeese State.
Yeah, man. So you got to balance that out, man. As always.
You
mine, man. You are mine. I appreciate this.
We're going to keep this thing going during the week.
It's going to keep rolling. Keep
this
rolling.
Like Kid and Play.
That's okay, right. Kid and Play. Hola, hola, hey.
Hola. Man, they don't know about that, man. You got to ease into it, man. We got to stay with Run TMC, baby.
Yeah, we'll stay with Run TMC. Next week, we are going to get into receivers. So
let's
definitely stay tuned for that, folks. And
appreciate you, man.
All right,
Doc.
This is AJ Brown, and you're talking with TD.
That right there makes me ready to run through a wall. Like that old movie, Who Framed Roger Rabbit? And you got the silhouette of the rabbit in the wall. That's how it gets me, man. And now that the season is over, I'm like that for the next part of the actual season, and that's the draft. So if we're going to talk draft, it's only right we bring in an established guy who's been doing this thing for a while. And I've been following along, Matt Miller. TheDraftScout.com. What's going on, man?
Not much, man. It's great to connect. Likewise, I've been following you for a long time as well, which just makes us both sound old. But you do great coverage, and I hope you know I have a tremendous amount of respect for what you do.
Yeah, awesome, man, and I appreciate that. And, you know, it's really good when you have authorities in the draft that dive deep and, you know, give – just opinions and analysis on a lot of guys that may not be, you know, go beyond the top five at each position. I guess that's what I'm trying to say. And then that's something that you do. Most of these listeners know about your work, but why don't you let them know what you have going on now? Because I think that's really important. And you're doing something that a lot of guys are starting to do. And it's a great thing, because I know – you don't have to worry about appeasing anybody. You just go ahead and write what you want to write.
That is very true. So after a decade of Bleacher Report, this past summer, I had the option to, you know, renew my contract there or try something else. And I thought, you know what, let's try something else. And a big reason for that, I mean, I loved working at Bleacher Report. Obviously, I was there 10 years, which is crazy in this industry. And they gave me my start. But I really just wanted to get back to covering things my way. And the best way I can explain it is, at Bleacher Report, there's a lot of really, really talented writers. There's a lot of, you know, really, really talented people covering a lot of different sports. You know, the NBA is huge for Bleacher Report. College basketball is huge. The NFL, like outside of, you know, the daily grind of following these teams is huge. You know, the kind of the culture surrounding the sport. And so sometimes I felt like what I did got a little bit lost in that. And I'm sure Mel Kiper and Todd McShay feel the same way at ESPN. But I want to, like, live and breathe the NFL and the NFL draft 365 days a year. Like, I want to give people that type of coverage. So I decided to, you know, go out on my own and launch an independent website, like you said, called thedraftscout.com. It is going to be a little bit of a membership service, $7 a month. But you're going to get all the articles that you're used to getting from me, and also a lot more, you know, kind of fun things like Zoom happy hours, going to do scouting clinics over Zoom. We're going to do live mock drafts where the members get to be a GM. So just kind of the fun stuff surrounding it. It's not all serious. Anybody who's followed me knows I like to have fun and hang out with my readers, hang out with my listeners. So I'm pretty excited to get this going, man.
Yeah, no doubt. And I hate to see the combo, you know, you and Connor Rogers get broken up, but I guess, you know, Shaq and Kobe got broken up. So this is right. Just another one of those duos.
That, I love that comparison. I'll have to tell Connor we got compared to Shaq and Kobe. That's pretty good. You know, I mean, the Beatles even broke up. Everybody breaks up.
Yeah, the Fat Boys, you name it, everybody.
Right, exactly. He's going to do great things at BR. I know he will, but, you know, 10 years is a hell of a long time to work somewhere. So I'm excited, you know, to kind of, you know, it's weird even when, you know, to do a radio show and people not say, you know, Matt Miller from Bleacher Report. It's still weird for me. So I'm sure everybody's adjusting to it.
Yeah, it's an adjustment. So how can the listeners, you know, get involved and get connected with you? What's the process like for them?
Yeah, it's super simple. Just go to thedraftscout.com. There's a subscribe button. Right now, everything's free. So you can even just hop on that free list. And the cool thing is, when you work somewhere big, your work can get lost. And I think that happened a lot with my articles. Now they just get sent straight to your email inbox. So everything I write, you'll get an email as soon as I hit publish, and it'll allow you to read it immediately or at your own convenience. You don't have to worry about favoriting a tweet and then going back a couple hours later when you have free time to read it. So I think it's a lot more convenient for people. But right now everything's free. Articles will start February 11th. The fun stuff is going on already with the Zoom happy hour, scouting clinics. There's a Discord server, which is like a message board people can interact on. So, but the 7-round mock draft, which I know everybody loves, will be there February 11th. And it'll be free in the beginning. And then, you know, as we get closer to the draft, that'll taper off a little bit.
So let's get into this, right? You look at this Titans team, and we're talking to Matt Miller of thedraftscout.com. If you look at this Titans team, they have a clear need at pass rush. I mean, this is a group, Matt. And I don't know if you know this or not, but they fielded 3 outside linebackers for most of their games. Only 3. And that's a position, especially 3-4 preference. They usually have 5-6 at that position. So I want to get into that, right? The Vic Beasley experiment, the Jadeveon Clowney, $22 million total down the drain. 0 sacks, maybe 6 QB hits. How can this Titans team get into that pass rush?
Yeah, I think the key is, you know, they looked at this year, J-Rob and Vrabel, and said, we were really close. We're in the AFC Championship game. Let's try to plug that hole with somebody who's ready right away.
Right.
Like you mentioned, it didn't work, and that's a lot more expensive. I think the good news for Titans fans is that this upcoming draft class is going to be really deep at the edge rusher position. And it's going to be deep in the 20s. You know, where y'all are picking this year at 22 overall, it's going to be good edge rushers. There is not a Chase Young this year. There's not a Bosa brother. There's not that guy who's a top 5 lock. In fact, the highest ranked edge I have is number 13 overall. That's Quiddy Pay out of Michigan. Mm-hmm. Joseph Osai from Texas is right below him. Then you got the duo from Miami with Gregory Rousseau and Jalen Phillips. Aziz Ojulari from Georgia is really, really talented. There are 5 edge rushers that are in that mix from, you know, 13 overall player, not pick, down to about 25 overall. So that's really, really good news for the Titans. And I think that's what they have to get back to. Like, you got a dude in Harold Landry, and it was through draft and develop. And Mike Vrabel is so good at working with pass rushers. I mean, we heard that when he was at Ohio State. We heard that when he was with the Houston Texans. We've seen that with Harold Landry. Mm-hmm. Let's give him another guy to work with. And I know, you know, last year there were a lot of holes to plug because of contracts, and you had to go right tackle. That move didn't work out either. So I think they got to go back to the drawing board and look at how do we build this roster? How do we get to where we are? It was through smart, calculated, and a little bit of luck, risk and free agency with guys like Ryan Tannehill. And then it's through draft and development. So I think this year does play out well if they can, you know, if they can figure out what's going on with Isaiah Wilson and not have to worry about a right tackle. And, you know, Dennis Kelly did a pretty good job filling in. If you don't have to worry about a right tackle in round 1, I mean, the runway's clear to take a pass rusher, and there would be a pretty good one who should be available there.
And I know you like your Texas guys. You know, I know that's the thing. So tell me about this young fella coming out of Texas. I know he's a tremendous athlete, but, you know, what would make him project into this Titan scheme?
Yeah, and you know what's funny? Being a Texas fan, I find like I'm harder on those guys because I've seen them play a lot more. And so with Joseph Osai, this is someone who he's only played 1 year as a true pass rusher. They moved him there in early 2020 in the bowl game. They moved him to pass rusher under this new defensive scheme with Chris Ash as DC and said, hey, just go get the quarterback. And he did. And unlike a lot of college guys, you know, he's 6'4", 255. He's got an NFL build. He's big frame, long arms, big hands. The great thing is not only was he the best defensive player in the Big 12 this year, he's still raw. So there's still some upside there. Mm-hmm. And I think when you look at him, he's got a relentless motor. He came up big in big games, you know, Red River Shootout, games like that, bowl games. I mean, he's making plays in those biggest games. So I think that's something else you love about him. This is not your traditional Big 12 pass rusher who just has the table set for him. He was actually creating pressures on his own. It's not a lot of uncontested sacks. I mean, he had 15 and a half tackles for a loss this year. I think only 5.5 sacks was the total he came down with in 9 games. But, I mean, he was just electric and was so, so good. I mean, stopping the run as well. He was able to, you know, pinch on the corner. He's able to squeeze guys down. So I like the upside there a lot. But I also think that he has the athleticism and he has the body type to be able to play right away. A lot of times when you're watching college guys, right, you want to see, do you have that first step that's going to be able to win in the NFL?
Mm-hmm.
He actually has that, but then he has the body type and the length where he's going to be able to convert that. You know, it's not just, you're not a one-trick pony where you have to be fast, you have to jump the snap. I think he has the tools to where he can become a really well-rounded pass rusher.
Very intriguing. We're talking to Matt Miller from the DraftScout.com. He just broke down the Texas pass rusher, Joseph Osai. What about second, third round? You know, your day two guys. This is a team that will, you know, they'll be picking at the bottom end of each round. So second round is going to be intriguing. Zaven Collins, Patrick Jones.
Yeah.
Quincy Roche. Because you mentioned Miami guys, but you left out, you know, the Temple guy. I get it. I get it. But what about those three? I mean, are those options that you think will be there in the second round?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's funny because I pulled up my rankings. It's a bit of a work in progress as we get ready for the Senior Bowl. But I have 6 guys who are round 2 graded at edge. Zaven Collins at Tulsa, a big one, 11.5 tackles for a loss this year, 4 sacks, 4 interceptions, 2 pick sixes. Like, it's just crazy the things he did at that level. He's a do-it-all player. Patrick Jones at Pitt, another player who definitely has that Mike Vrabel body type, 6'5", 265. Jason Owa at Penn State is someone to keep an eye on as well. Mm-hmm. He's 6'5", 260. Coaches at Penn State have told me that this dude has run a 4.3. Now, that might be a little bit of an exaggeration, but even if he runs a 4.4 at 6'5", 260, he didn't have a sack this year. He did have 6 tackles for a loss. There is just untapped potential pouring out of this guy. So there's definitely something to like there. Ronnie Perkins at Oklahoma really, really turned it on this year. You mentioned Quincy Roche. Really good transfer from Temple who ended up at Miami. And I think with the Miami guys, what you worry about is, were they lucky enough to have 3 players who should be top 75 picks, or how much of it was the scheme? I think that's something I'm even still trying to figure out with Gregory Rousseau last year was so dominant. Jalen Phillips this year bust on the scene at, you know, being a former 5-star player, and Quincy Roche has been really, really solid. So it's a good edge rusher group in that tier. And even when you get into the third round, there's more good players there who, you know, Rashad Weaver at Pitt is a good player.
Yeah,
Malcolm Kuntz at Buffalo, Carlos Basham at Wake Forest, Chris Rumpf at Duke. Like, there's really good players in the third round as well.
It's really interesting how this – because, you know, the beginning of the year, you have maybe 5 guys. Okay, yeah, these guys would be good. But this draft class of outside of edge guys, I mean, they've really rounded out into a nice group. And I think that works perfectly – for the Titans. Now, I want to ask you this because, you know, you look at these guys and some, they box score scout, right? But others, like, actually really watch their games and get into the film. How do you go about evaluating these guys if you're not seeing the production that would more warrant a higher draft pick, if you follow me?
That's the hard part. And you try to figure out the context of it. You try to look, okay, why didn't he have production? Is it because, you know, like Chase Young last year where you come back and you get triple teamed? Is that why you don't have production? Or is it something that's missing in your game? And so, you know, with guys like Jason Owa at Penn State, okay, you didn't have a sack. Why not? Because the guy opposite you, Shaka Toney, is pretty good as well. So you try to figure that out. And I haven't got through all his games to give you a concrete answer on that yet, but you do have to reconcile that. Mm-hmm. And in the same way, you have to look at guys who have great production and say, if you had 19 sacks, how many of those did you produce on your own? How many of those were you just cleaning up, or it was a busted play and you fell on a guy? So with college numbers, you got to go in and do the work and really dig and try to figure out what numbers are real and what aren't real. And that's every position. That's not just edge rushers. You got to do it with quarterbacks probably more than anybody else. And, you know, with receivers, you can't just look at their yards and be like, okay, well, he's got 1,800 yards. What's going on here? You have to look and really dig down a little bit deeper. You know, level of competition comes into factor as well. Yeah, and this year, thank God, we saw mostly conference play. So you don't have to do that as much this year, but it's a grind. And that's why teams have 20 scouts on staff, because they're trying to figure that out of, okay, we got to dig in and not only figure out who this person is on the field, but we got to figure out who they are off the field. And that's the other key component.
2020, it was a year of adjustment, right? Us beat reporters, you know, we're not in the locker room. We're doing Zoom calls and it just kind of sorting through everything that way. 2021, we're kind of picking up the trash from 2020, and it's still an adjustment. Everything isn't the same. For you, it's not going to be the same, right? Senior Bowl, I'm absolutely looking forward to that. That's going to be, but even that's not going to be the same. Combine, we'll see what happens there. If you were a GM in this current climate, how do you go about evaluating and actually feeling confident about a pick?
It's hard, right? It's really hard. And I think what we'll see is a lot like last year, where the draft is not going to have a lot of surprises. We're going to see guys who were good on tape get drafted early. That becomes a challenge because some people opted out this past year. But, you know, guys like Ja'Marr Chase at LSU had 20 touchdowns in 2019. We know he's really good. The body type is there. The speed is there. You know, he's like a faster A.J. Brown for Titans fans to try to picture who this guy is. Mm-hmm. I think that we're going to see it go more to that. We're going to see people who it's going to be the players who showed up on Saturdays. They're going to get drafted a little bit higher over some of the projections, because like you said, I'm very skeptical the combine happens, but that's kind of good for teams, right? Because everybody hates when their team drafts the workout warrior. It's like, oh man, yeah, he's not gonna do anything. He's just fast, you know? And so this might be good news for fans, is that we're not going to see that this year. We're going to see people drafted more on substance and not so much on hype.
One of the things that I do, you know, when I go to the combine or Senior Bowl, I always like to talk to these guys, and like, you get a feel for personalities, and I just have different personalities that I associate with different positions, like corners, receivers, linebackers. Those are always alphas, like A types, you know what I mean? Aggressive types, dogs, right? So if I'm talking to a guy, I'll give you an excellent example. A.J. Jenkins. If you remember him from Illinois.
Oh, yeah.
I remember talking to him, and I walked away like, oh. You know what I mean? I'm like, whoa. I don't know about this dude. His film looks good, but I don't know. You know, how do you, as far as evaluating, go beyond film and beyond what you see? Like, what are some intangibles that you go by?
Yeah, you know, I'm fortunate, like yourself, where I get a lot of access to these guys not in the media scrum. You know, you don't want to stand there with 50 other people trying to ask a question and try to evaluate a person off that. So that one-on-one access is super important to me. You know, I also spend a lot of time talking to recruiting directors at colleges. You know, not you know, the guys who have made a connection with this person when they were bringing them in, or they've made that daily connection with them. So I spend a lot of time with those guys. Strength and conditioning coaches are super important as well. Guys whose name is not attached to the player, right? Like last year, Mario Cristobal got pretty mad at me because I put out there that, you know, scouts said that Justin Herbert's kind of quiet, not a great leader. Cristobal got so mad at me, and it's like, okay, well, this is what people are saying. And I love Mario, but he's invested in his guys being drafted high. That recruiting coordinator, he isn't. This has nothing to do with his job. So I try to talk to people who don't have, you know, a horse in the race, so to speak.
Yeah.
And then also, I love looking for players who've overcome adversity. And nice. I say that so much with the quarterback position. I want somebody who's going to have a chip on their shoulder. I want a Patrick Mahomes who, you know, is recruited by Texas Tech, which is not a marquee school in the state of Texas. No offense to the Red Raiders. You want a guy like a Baker Mayfield who had to walk on at Oklahoma and fight for a starting job. You want the Josh Allens who were not recruited and had to go to a JUCO before going to Wyoming, of all places. Like, so I love players who have to overcome some adversity, whether it's injury, whether it's, you know, a tough upbringing, whether it's not being recruited well. I think guys who've had to handle that are just so better situated and positioned for success in the NFL, where you've had to overcome some things. You had to be an adult maybe a little bit earlier in life. It just sets you up better for success, I think. So it's not to say that there aren't examples of people who've, you know, had an easier path. You know, the Manning brothers, I don't think ever missed a meal, and they turned out pretty good. But I do like when guys have had to fight for it a little bit more.
There you have it, ladies and gentlemen. You get a opportunity to pull the curtain back and find out how Matt, a guy who's done this for, as you said, a decade, this is how he goes about being able to give you the evaluation and analysis of these prospects. And you could definitely, not you could, you definitely need to check out the draftscout.com. As Matt mentioned, there are our member mocks there, and this is the season. It's the season. It's starting to be able to do that. And also, you could check him out on Twitter at NFLDraftScout.com. Matt, we really appreciate it. When is the next mock that you're doing with the members?
Yeah, it'll be February 11th, full seven rounds. And because I'm addicted to this stuff, I also broke out three tiered needs for every team. So for the Titans, it's like, what's tier one? What's tier two? What's tier three? So there'll be a ton of content coming out that week of February 11th because I'm an addict and I can't get enough of this stuff, apparently.
All right, this is what I want you to do. I want you to stand up and say, my name is Matt, and I'm a draft addict.
It's a problem. It's a good problem when it's your job, yes. But I'm definitely itching to be able to put content out there again. So I think February 11th is just going to be a whirlwind of things coming out.
No doubt. So, folks, make sure you check that out. As you heard, awesome conversation. Matt, we're going to do this again. I wanted to get it a little bit further past the edge guys, but, you know, you got into that so well. So we'll definitely, folks, this is a teaser. We'll get Matt back on, and we'll talk some more shop.
I can't wait, man. Looking forward to it, and hopefully get a chance to see you on the road somewhere this year.
Yes, sir.
Hey, man, this is Kevin Byer, and I'm talking with TD.
Time to wrap this thing up. The temperature is definitely rising, right? Because if you scroll through Titans Twitter, there's some hotheads, man. There's a lot of fire.
A lot of emotion. A lot of emotion after that game.
And fire being spewed onto the timeline. And I get it, man. Like, this team, they went to the AFC Championship game last year. They made some moves that really were supposed to push them over the top. It didn't work out. And they still managed to win the first division title, AFC South title, since 2008. But, yeah. They lost to the Ravens, and I get it. So I guess really what we need to do is say what's next. And for me, the next thing obviously is the Senior Bowl. That's going to be really interesting, just seeing how this process. You heard what Matt Miller said about it's going to be tough for GMs. I want to see how they're able to go through this process without being able to get their hands on a prospect as much. Right, so you got the Senior Bowl. We'll be down there for that. I'll have stuff for you guys from there. I'm not sure how many others, but you know, this is what we do, right? Mm-hmm. 24 year round, you going to get Titans coverage, and you're going to get analysis and understanding of these guys in the draft, and I think that's the only way to do it. So rest assured, I will be down there at the Senior Bowl, bringing it for you guys. So that's really what's next. But, I mean, as an organization, I think what's next is a self-assessment. They need to really look at themselves in the mirror and say, we fell short at edge. We fell short specifically at outside linebacker. How can we fix it? And that's why I really honed in on outside backers with Matt Miller on that segment. I wanted you guys to get his perspective on some of them. And we're going to have more on. I mean, we back in December, we had Emory Hunt on to start this thing off. And we're going to keep bringing you guys like that because that is the area where they really absolutely need to address. But in addition to, you know, looking at the draft with that self-assessment, they have to look at free agency. And they have to look at guys that they need to bring in here to help this team. And everybody's saying the cap stuff. I want to direct you to BroadwaySportsMedia.com. BroadwaySports.com. Mike Herndon had a really solid article about how they could open up cap space. And this is what I was trying to tell Jarrett this week on Stillman & Company, Stillman & Friends, the show. Don't be so concerned about the cap number you see. So, Mike, excellent job there. Matter of fact, I think we're going to bring him on next week to talk about that. So I'll reach out to him because that's something you have to keep in mind. There are guys, I mean, Carl Lawson, Mike and I share a brain on that one. Carl Lawson is a guy I think, you know, could come in a lot of upside, and he's a young player. He could come in and he'll fit the mindset and the approach to the game. He fits this culture that they have here. Not like Vic Beasley. He fits it, right? So he's a guy. D Ford, you definitely need to watch for what the 49ers do with D Ford, because if he's on the board, you absolutely, even if it's a one-year deal, you absolutely take a look at him, and I think that's a move you make. Julian Aquara from Detroit, he's someone else to look at. He had the safety against the Titans. So those are just three names to drop. But I think that's what's next, self-assessment and how do we fix it from here. That's the way I look at that. But another thing that's, you know, next is Arthur Smith. Is Coach Art gone? I don't know. I don't know. I really think he has to. And Chris was right. Chris Sanders was right. You want to strike while the iron's hot. But not all food is best cooked while the iron's 100% hot, if you follow me. Sometimes you want to marinate it and nurture it and slow cook it. I think if he goes to, you know, a team like the Eagles, nah, it's not good. If he goes to the Texans, I don't think that's good because I don't know. Nah, man, the Texans got Deshaun Watson. Forget that.
For now.
Yeah, for now.
For now.
For now. If I'm interviewing with them, I'm looking them right. Like, I'm taking my glasses off and leaning right in there, and I may mess around, take their glasses off too and say, hey, are you keeping Deshaun?
Make a blood promise.
Exactly.
Make a blood pact.
Exactly. You pull the dagger out, you roll your sleeve up, you know what I'm saying? You have to do that. But, you know, it has to be the right opportunity. I think the Jets are a good one for him. I think the Chargers, those are good opportunities. Falcons too. So if he is gone, Todd Downing, Pep Hamilton, outside, a good option to bring in. But Todd Downing, Pat O'Hara, I think would be solid options, you know, internal. We'll see how that – we're going to keep track of that. So that's the other thing. And then the defensive coordinator side of it. they're bringing a defensive coordinator. I'm pretty sure of that. I'm not going to say 100% sure, but, you know, from some of the reporting and things that I've heard, they're bringing one in.
Be a wise decision.
James Betcher is a name to watch. I've heard that there's interest there. So I think it would be a good thing. You know, you bring in James Betcher, you have the tie to Marcus Golden. That's a free agent that you could sign. It would be reasonable and come in and help the culture. So that's really what I wanted to focus on in this last segment, the self-assessment, what's next there, and also with the coordinators. But I think overall this coaching staff is still good. And mind you, what if they – and I'm going to – before we blow the whistle, I'm going to drop it on this one. What if they decided to make Jim Haslett the defensive coordinator and bring back Ty McKenzie as the inside linebackers coach? And the reason why I say that, look how well Rashawn Evans played with Coach Ty as the position coach. Look what happened when he was gone. I'm just saying what I'm saying. Let me get that music, please. Blow the whistle. Blow the whistle. Blow the whistle. All right, so here's the deal, Elijah. I mentioned this team earlier, and I'm going to bring it back up. I mean, Jeffrey Lurie, just what the heck are you doing?
Rude.
Your franchise waited 50 years, 50 long years to win a Super Bowl. This guy came in year two, not year 10, 20, 15, year or 25, year two, led your organization to a Super Bowl, 2017. So you mean to tell me you're going to fire him?
Short-term memory.
A team that is over $70 million. Like, they have to do so much cutting just to get under the cap. Is that Doug Peterson's fault?
Nope.
I don't think so. Who has the final say on draft picks? Like, you could play the point and blame game all you want. But the bottom line is, your GM is the one that makes the draft decisions. I get it. The coaching staff seem to like Jalen Reagor more than Justin Jefferson, but you're the GM. I don't get it. I really don't. So I'm blowing the whistle on the Eagles for firing Doug Peterson, because that's just ridiculous. And I get it. This year was just a dumpster fire for them. And I understand, and I know personally from being in that building, John DeFilippo, Frank Wright, Mike Groh, Press Taylor, who's still there, those guys had a major influence on that offense. I get it. DeFilippo's gone. Frank Reich's gone. Mike Groh's gone. I understand. Give Doug Peterson a chance to find other guys. I just think it's premature. It's something that shouldn't have happened. Like I said, 50 years. And let me tell you something, Elijah. I was at the parade. I'm talking about grown men crying. I'm talking about a fan that went up to Lane Johnson. You ready for this?
Oh, yeah.
With his dad's ashes in an urn, telling him, I wish my dad was here to see this. Those are the type of things that Doug Peterson brought to that city. And you fire him.
Less than 5 years ago. This isn't like this happened in 2000 or 2004 or 5.
And you fire him. I just did a gesture like my grandmother. Rest in peace. You just put your hand up and you wave it. Just like, ugh. You know what
it's
I mean?
Done.
So, on that note, we are done. The off season is here, but there is no off season for us. We're going to keep it rolling. Appreciate each of you for tuning in. Shout out to Chris Sanders for each and every week that he gave us on the show, and each and every week that he's going to give us. Shout out Matt Miller, thedraftscout.com. Shout out Elijah hitting those switches. And shout out to you for tuning in. God bless and good night.